Welcome to The Voice of Retail. I'm your host, Michael LeBlanc. And this podcast is brought to you in conjunction with Retail Council of Canada. With over a decade of success and a loyal fan base in their pouch, this Canadian menswear staple brand is disrupting the North American men's underwear space. Today on The Voice of Retail, we're going to strip back the layers of Saks Underwear's retail strategy with their CEO, Wendy Bennison. As a seasoned retail executive with senior leadership roles at Roots and Marks, plus industry leadership on the RCC Board of Directors, Wendy offers a wealth of insight on Saks' integrated channel network strategy and the retail industry at large. Wendy speaks to Saks' consumer alignment priorities, navigating relationships with retailers, and applying a larger context to COVID-19 consumer behavior.
First of all, choosing the right partner, and then the way you think about those partnerships. We have, you know, top-to-top meetings with all of the very senior people in the retail partnerships that we have, and we sit with them, including me and our VP of sales and our own senior team, and talk about what our brand stands for, who our customer is, and where we're going, you know, looking for that consumer alignment.
Let's listen in now. Wendy, welcome to the Voice of Retail podcast. How are you doing this morning?
Great. Thank you for welcoming me to the podcast, Michael. I'm fabulous.
Well, thanks for joining me. It's great to hear your voice. You and I have met and crossed paths and worked together through Retail Council of Canada and other things and stayed in touch. So I'm really thrilled and excited that we have a chance to talk about what's going on in your life today and all the fun adventures you're having. Let's jump right in. Tell the listeners who may perhaps not be familiar with who you are a little bit about yourself, your background, your professional journey, and your role at Saks.
Sure. Well, again, thanks for having me. A little bit about me. Well, I think of myself as a retailer. I guess that's why you invited me here today.
thought leader, retailer, yeah, all those things.
Yeah. So I've grown up in the retail industry. I've had along the way, I'll tell you a bit more about it in a second, the amazing good fortune to work inside of a number of different growth businesses, you know, during what I would call transformational times, you know, where I was surrounded by strong leadership and great talent to learn from. And I grew up on the operating side of retail. So I learned early on the power of a great plan followed by outstanding execution. It's kind of my formula. My career has included a long stretch at Mark's Work Warehouse, which of course is a division of Canadian Tire. I'm also thrilled to say that Mark's is a strategic retail partner for Saks today. Following that, I landed at Roots Canada, an iconic Canadian brand where I was president and CEO for a few years. And while there, we took the business through a change of control from the ownership by the founders into private equity. So that was an incredible journey. And then I left there to follow a dream to live in the west coast of Canada and experience what it was like to live by the mountains. So I went out there to join Kit and Ace. And after a one-year stint there as president, things changed. And 5 years ago, I landed at Saks as CEO. You know, where together we've been growing rapidly and actually recently took the business through a change of control to new ownership. Thrilled to say we're now owned by the TZP Private Equity Group, who are proving to be excellent partners. So that's a little bit about my journey as to, you know, where I got to today.
Well, let's talk about Saks. So I know it well. I've been a longtime customer, actually.
Thank you.
Love them. Very familiar. But of course, once again, perhaps the audience might not know about Saks and probably don't know if they might have known the brand. They don't know full scope and scale. Like, where do you trade? How do you go to market?
Yeah.
And all those things. Talk about Saks for a bit.
Yeah, for sure. Well, first of all, I can tell you, I never imagined myself, you know, ending up operating a men's underwear brand. We spend our days talking about the very private parts of men. And, you know, so that's been a surprising career turn for me. But I have to say, the brand of business is a really exciting place to be. So for those of you who don't know much about Saks, we're a Canadian company. We were founded in Vancouver more than a decade ago. We're a global brand that plays in the premium technical men's underwear space and whose products focus is on comfort and self-care for men. Over a decade ago, as I said, we started out as a wholesaler. So in the early days of the brand, you know, they were beginning to sell in independent retailers and then eventually got into some larger retailers. And then today we've gone on a number of years ago to add in our owned D2C and marketplaces. And so today we have that in addition to our amazing retail partnerships. You know, our brand and product quite literally revolutionized and disrupted the men's underwear category, you know, through a technical patented ballpark pouch and other technical features that our product delivers. We have this incredible loyal fan base. We represent a diverse customer base and strive to give voice to challenging, uncomfortable conversations on the topics relating to changes in masculinity. So since then, we've also, you know, begun the journey of adding other close-in, I'll call them, apparel categories. Mm. So, but we, you know, we think of the gateway to the Saks brand as men's premium underwear. And it's a growing market. We've been growing with that market, and it's a really exciting space. It's always exciting to be in a space that's being disrupted. Yeah. This one is certainly that.
Well, I can say for the fellas listening, it was epiphany for me. Where did I buy my first pair? I think it was at Got Style, small specialty store, men's store here in Toronto. And, you put them on, you just get, it's like an epiphany. This is, I don't know, five years ago. And I'm like, I'm never going back. I'm like, this is it. You described the category as technical, which is an interesting, I mean, you know, people follow, but you guys lead, right? You're that was originator.
Well, you know, the words are customer. If ever you want to spend a fun few minutes, just go read some of our reviews, because our customers get to talk about our brand in ways we couldn't possibly talk about it through our marketing. The passion is really major, and customers talk about it as life changing. Like that, those are their words. You know, the underwear market is a massive market, but it's largely made up of $4 a pair.
Yeah.
You know, white underwear and
the equivalent of the box
bras. Correct. And that are really not technical and that really don't do a good job of supporting men. So anyway, it's an awesome product.
I want to talk about a particular element of the retail strategy and the retail landscape, and it's sometimes referred to as the elephant in the room. So you started as a wholesaler. You have relationships. Now you're selling direct. You could be, you know, there's a lot of growth in that area, the digital native vertical brands. You're not digital native, but you play in that direct. How do you balance wholesale trade relationships and growth and selling direct to customers? So, you know, a long time ago, it was verboten, right? You were like, you were not going to, you're selling against me. There was a lot of emotion sometimes involved. Yeah. When you were, you know, going direct, you're stealing my customers. But that's evolved over the years. How do you think about that, and how do you craft that strategy? So,
you
know, 1 + 1 = 3. Everybody.
Yeah,
knows.
Yeah. Well, for sure. I mean, you know, let's face it. Brands today are built in the digital space. So let's start there. That's where they are built. It's how consumers become connected with them. We have something here that we refer to as an integrated channel network strategy. That's how we think. We really think about being where our customers want us to be. You know, underwear gets sold in a lot of different places, and we want to be wherever the customer wants us to be. But coming back to your question about the relationships with our wholesalers, you know, as with everything, it starts with, you know, consumer and market insight that leads you to the right partners. And I think from the very beginning, Saks did a really great job of determining the right partners. The success, honestly, is being disciplined about who you partner with and why. And then it's about investing deeply in servicing those partners with senior level discussions about business strategy, long-term business and brand building plans. And then it's about really working together with them to deliver insight-driven, right assortments, providing them with retail analytics, you know, ultimately supporting marketing efforts with them. And again, just being a great service partner in terms of delivering the product itself. So I think, I think it really begins with the way you treat, first of all, choosing the right partner, and then the way you think about those partnerships. We have, you know, top-to-top meetings with all of the very senior people in the retail partnerships that we have, and we sit with them including me and our VP of sales and our own senior team, and talk about what our brand stands for, who our customer is, and where we're going, you know, looking for that consumer alignment. And it works. It works. I think it's about being selective about who you work with and then really investing in those relationships.
Do you think tactically about how to present the brand as you sell direct to customers? So I launched Levi Strauss online in 1997 to sell direct. Imagine, you know, 98% of our business was done by like Sears, Eaton's, and the Bay, and then beyond, you know, maybe a bit of Jeanery. So it was an interesting days, but the way we crafted the site strategy, even at that point, and it was online, was we're going to be the home for everything, because not every wholesale partner takes everything. They have different assortments. Channel management, as we would call it. Is that some of the things you spend some time internally thinking about, is what
for
to present?
For sure. I mean, first of all, we think of our owned D2C as the flagship store. You know, it's where you're going to go to get the fullest experience of the brand in terms of, you know, knowledge about the product. You know, if you want to go and take an underwear quiz about, you know, the perfect pair for you, it's the place where you can ultimately really provide the greatest service and, to your point, the broadest assortment. And, you know, but certainly when we think about the marketplaces we're in and the retailers we're in and our own site is, as I said, it's the flagship store. We always want the customer to get the fullest expression of our brand there, because we know that very often they'll come there to learn about the brand and they may go to a store to try it.
Which you're fine with, right? I mean, a well-built site does double duty, right? Build the brand.
Yes.
And sell direct to those who want. But basically, it has to do all those things, right?
It has to do all of those things. Mm-hmm. And we know, you know, through our own insight, that customers bounce around in all of the channels that we sell in. Mm-hmm. We know that customers discover brands in retail and experience them there. And then they might decide, you know, that they'll gift shop online, or they might be in an independent retailer for another reason, see our product. So really, we know our customers travel around the various different places our product is being offered to them. And we think that's awesome. We want to be where the customer is. And that is what I mean by an integrated channel network strategy.
Let's come at the same question from a different angle. So you spent most of your career on the other side of the table, so to speak, with brands talking to you or wholesalers talking to you. What's your advice to retailers listening about how best to work with brands like yourselves? I think you're already talking about some of them, but imagine yourself, you know, the shoes on the other foot, or the pair of underwears on the other, whatever. you know, what's your advice to retailers when those discussions, and they increasingly come up more? What's the best way to approach it from your perspective?
Well, I mean, first and foremost, I mean, retailers, of course, are looking for great business partners. You know, so for the retailer, it's all about, in my view, partnering with brands that will bring them traffic, right, and create great margins for them. So as with anything a retailer decides to do inside of their own four walls, it has to start with who the customer is. And I think retailers should expect strong levels of insight from the brands you know, that they're thinking of doing business with, that should ultimately give them confidence that it's the right customer and that it's the right brand messaging in alignment with their own brand. And the brands need to provide retailers with a robust business case, and retailers should expect that. So, you know, I think, retailers love emerging brands. They love brands that, you know, are reaching the heart of a customer that is very often the very same customer that's standing inside of their own brick and mortar stores or even shopping on their own websites. And so I think, you know, I think if a retailer thinks of a brand as a business partner, and expects that business partner to come to the table with insight and data, along with obviously, you know, relevant product that consumers are going to love, I think great partnerships can be made. I know they can be, because we have phenomenal partnerships with our retailers. I can't say enough about the incredible give and take that exists together between us. You know, it is very much a helping each other out here. We know our brand is driving footsteps to their men's underwear department. which is what they need. And we know that customers go there to discover brands. So it's a fantastic partnership if you think about it as such.
Well, I love your approach. I used to reflect on it as, you know, I'm looking for partners, not mercenaries. Like if I'm talking to a wholesaler who's clearly trying to build their own book of business on my back, that's generally not a very productive conversation. So it's great advice. Let's take a bit of a turn. Let's talk about building your brand, like product development, one pair of underwear at a time, building a global brand. What's the tradecraft of that? So open the lid a little bit on how you approach, you know, what does the product road look like? Where do you go for insight and how do you explore different markets? Talk about that a little bit.
Well, first of all, we are a product-centric organization. So, you know, one of the things I had the advantage of along the way, my own career at Marks, at Roots, you know, the business was centered around the product it sold and centered around the consumer who was buying that. So like all other parts of our business, product, including the building out of existing assortments and the addition of new, starts with, you know, data-driven consumer insight. We do deep research. We do concept testing. We lab test new technologies and fabrications. We test consumer reaction to everything, pricing, prints. We do focus groups. We do ongoing work with a group of customers on fit and function. Yes, we also use historical sales analysis, and we have a great data tool that allows us to have visibility to the customer journey at the product level. You know, we can see what products they buy first and what after, you know, when they buy that, where do they go next? So we can really learn from that. And of course, lastly, we monitor our competitors very, very closely and fiercely protect our patent from any infringements. You know, so I would say, Michael, ultimately it's data and deep interest in consumers' needs and behaviors that guide all of our decision-making.
Let's talk about leadership. You've been a leader for most of your career, leading people and leading organizations. I reflect on the past couple of years of COVID. And the one thing I think about is that, COVID provided a mission. Like everybody was aligned and going in one direction. And on building and more agile, we don't know what's coming up next. So how do we build an agile organization? Talk about your leadership style and maybe any tips or advice for the retail leaders listening, or any leaders listening, about your style of leadership and how to keep people, teams motivated. These have been very difficult times, sometimes very challenging. And what have you been working on and what are your tips?
You know, one of the very first things I did when I arrived at Saks was very, very purposefully work with everybody who was there at that time to land on together what our core value system would be. I wanted to make sure when I arrived that I understood, for the people that were already there, you know, what were the things about the culture they really wanted to protect. And what were some of the things that we thought were opportunities within that culture? And so way back then, we developed what we call the SAC 6, which is how we wanted to behave with one another, how we wanted to, you know, in effect, live with each other every day as we built out this business. And so I'm a big believer in let's start by articulating the culture we want to live into together. It's really important. And when I think back on the pandemic, oh my God, that first year, I was, you know, the first few months were utter chaos. I'm so proud when I look back. I think because we had done a lot of work building trust together, building an incredible team of people who, you know, were proud of being scrappy, were proud of, you know, the way they partnered together, that what I witnessed every day in the leaders of our business coming together in a huddle to kind of say, what are today's challenges? How can we help each other? What decisions are we going to make today? What I would say is what we had was a really great team and culture. It became even stronger through the pandemic because we had to learn to trust each other. We had to learn to make decisions rapidly and keep moving. So, having the right people in the right chairs. But, you know, if I think of some of the key advice I would give, you know, as I think about the various businesses I've come into that sort of feed into everything I was just talking about. I mean, first and foremost, you have to make sure you have an insight-driven strategy, right? And that starts with deeply understanding your current business, your consumer, you know, and the market that you play in. And, you know, when your business lacks skills and expertise in a particular area, find a way to buy that knowledge or skill through the right external resources. You know, be really honest with yourself about what you don't know, because it's not hard to actually, you know, get information to build out your strategy. Yeah.
Right. Equally important to address that as it is to what you basically are doing is setting kind of a point of arrival in terms of a culture.
Yes.
And then how do you kind of, if necessary, backfill in or grow roles and strategies and all those things to meet?
Absolutely. That, right? Oh, for sure. I mean, once that strategy is built, understanding deeply the work that actually needs to be done to achieve it and in what order that work needs to be done, and then building out a comprehensive organizational design. So in the first year I was at Saks, we built out a 5-year organizational design based on the work of the strategy. And then you go out and make sure you hire the right talent at the right time on that journey. And then honestly, Michael, let that talent do what they're good at, you know, while as the leader, you keep them focused on the right things.
Get out of the way.
So being strong, focused executors inside of, you know, a defined, supportive, and I'll call it fun culture that ultimately holds people accountable for that work that needs to be done. Like for me, that's been our proven success formula.
Right on. All right, last question for you. I can't have you on the mic without asking your insights or thoughts about the impact of the COVID era on consumer and consumer behavior. I mean, we're kind of at the tail end, I think, of the COVID era. I mean, the goalposts keep moving a little bit, but I think we're at a better place than we were 2 years ago. I can't imagine consumers haven't changed with such a, you know, what I've called a circuit breaker behavior. What have you observed? You've talked about deep insight and, you know, anything, any thoughts about what's different? What has changed from now on versus what it was in the before time? What do you guys talk about around the table?
Well, you know, I might have a slightly different way of answering this than you might be expecting. My answer might be a bit narrower than you'd like, and you might have heard it before, but here's how I'm thinking about it. My opinion, COVID, while yes, obviously has been life altering, is one of many events along the way. I've been doing this for longer than I really want to admit. When I think about the number of things I've witnessed along the way in this industry that have impacted consumer behavior, you know, over the last number of decades, you know, from the establishment of a global economy, the arrival of a big box, you know, the redefining of opening price points, you know,
e-commerce, the
shift to online purchasing and access to a global brand at your fingertips, you know, the speed at which brands can build in the minds of consumers, you know, with digital marketing capabilities, just to name a few, Michael. So, you know, the key, in my opinion, to thriving through any of them is to be in touch with your consumer and market. And today, that's largely, in my opinion, driven by data science and analytics. It's about being flexible enough in your channel strategy to be able to pivot to wherever the customer is. And you know, when they get there, they need to find, again, you know, insight-driven, relevant products, you know, being offered at fair prices, you know, with ease of shop, being driven by, you know, the latest solutions, but also by an ethical business that they can trust and, you know, who cares about something more than profit. So, you know, while yes, I think, you know, there's all kinds of emerging trends. Re-commerce, I think, is a very interesting one for us all to start thinking about. Clearly, the customer has found their legs in online shopping. Although I still believe the experience of going to a store is never going to go away. And I look forward and I can't wait for retailers to be back in a place where they're, you know, they've got strong inventories and are able to give the fullest expression of service that they clearly want to give. What I feel like is this pandemic has been massive, and I don't want to minimize the impact it's had on businesses, you know, because we were at Saks so well positioned to move. That's what I mean about the flexibility, being able to move your inventory, move your marketing to where the customers are. We could quickly pivot to a more heavily based D2C strategy. But at the end of the day, if you really, you know, history would tell us, if you look back over the last, you know, 30 years or more, you know, there's been a lot of significant shifts. And I think it just comes to never losing sight with your consumer. And today, you know, with data science and analytics, and I'm not saying it's all about that. You have to use instinct and experience, but
art and science, right?
Keep your finger, yes, and keeping your finger on the pulse. That's how I look at it.
Well, it's a great message to end on. Not the first tectonic change in retail, won't be the last either, but hopefully the last pandemic we'll all have to deal with.
Yes, I hope so. You
know, okay, we'll take some other changes, but let's make sure hopefully we don't have another one of those. Listen, this has been a great conversation. How can people learn more about Saks? Get in touch and tell me about that bit.
Yeah, well, listen, I would, of course, love all of the listeners to go to Saks.com and check us out. I think you'll find that we are a pretty inspiring brand. I hope you'll find that with amazing product assortments. And if you're interested in reaching out to me, of course, I'd love to hear from you. And you can find me on LinkedIn.
Well, perfect. Well, Wendy, thanks so much for joining me. It's great to hear your voice, talk strategy, talk retail. It's been a real treat for me. And I wish you much continued success as you continue to lead Saks. And we've got new partners, so boy, you got a great you got great momentum and a great strategy. So once again, thanks for joining me on The Voice of Retail, and I wish you great holidays as well.
And same right back at you, and thank you very much for having me, Michael.